With Robinhood, not only can you trade individual stocks and ETFs, you can also seamlessly buy and sell crypto at low costs. Trade all in one place. Get started now on Robinhood.
Trading crypto involves significant risk. Crypto trading is offered through an account with Robinhood Crypto LLC. Robinhood Crypto is licensed to engage in virtual currency business activity by the New York State Department of Financial Services. Crypto held through Robinhood Crypto is not FDIC insured or SIPC protected. Investing involves risk, including loss of principal. Securities trading is offered through an account with Robinhood Financial LLC. Member SIPC, a registered broker-dealer.
Let me guess, and I do mean this as a guess, are you tired of being held back by outdated, ineffective, and soul-crushing project management practices? If you're ready to break free from these shackles of the tradition and unleash your full potential as a project leader, then you need to listen to today's episode. If you're new to the channel, I go by the name AED. For all you smart and intelligent folks out there, listen, that just simply means, Ed, I have an 8-point framework, and these 8 points, my goal, my job, my mission today is to unpack today's title, which is entitled, How Not to Appeal to Tradition in Leading a Project. Again, how not to appeal in tradition in leading a project. You know, John Maxwell said this quote, and it really resonated with me. It resonated with me so much, I decided to remix it. So I'm going to give you the original, then I'm going to give you the remix version. Those who know how to do a thing will have a job, but those that understand why they did it will always be their boss. Here's ED's remix. Project managers who know how to execute tasks will always have work, but those who understand the purpose behind their actions will lead a team. You mind if I share a story with you, family? I remember when I was leading a meeting and I'm having conversation with the stakeholders about a particular project with regards to the technology. And I said, so why are we using that technology and that vendor for the technology? Have we looked at other options? And they were like, no. And I was like, why not? And they said, well, because that's what we always do. We always go with this vendor. And I'm like, that's great. I was like, but there are other vendors out there that probably could offer us a little bit more based on what the price point we're paying for this vendor. And they're not even giving us, I'll say more like a concierge service where they're walking you through things. And the customer service was not as impressive. And so this is the reason why we were looking at the tool and what caught me off guard. And then this is when I'm gonna be honest with y'all, family, you know, we family, right? I just lost it. I mean, I was professional, but I lost it to a point where I was frustrated that it let me know how people can get caught up in the mundane or the processes of things and not really realize and ask the question, hey, does this still fit what we're doing today? Hey, is this going to really work for us long term? And they're just stuck in the here and now. That's why I shared those two quotes with you, family, because it's important that you're constantly, I don't want to use the word challenging, but really trying to get a deep rooted approach to what's actually going on. You know, according to Wikipedia, there's this terminology that's part of the title. Appeal to tradition is basically what it says is a claim in which a thesis is deemed correct on the basis of correlation with a past or present tradition. The appeal takes the form of, this is how we've always done it. And so it's a logical fallacy. And what gets me about that definition or that concept is that I see this happens a lot within project management. And I said, you know, I haven't really tackled that subject here of how you can get caught up in wanting to be do everything and anything in the pump and the PMBOK, but it doesn't apply to what you're doing. You know, if you need to get a W, like if you're so used to always putting WBSs together, work breakdown structures, but this particular project is not applicable and you know it's not, and you try and force it anyway, but why? Again, let me pull this book, because sometimes we forget that it's just the global standard. This is the 7th edition. It's just a global standard. I got the six right here as well. But it's just basically a global standard. It is saying, hey, these are the practices, these are the processes, these are the tools that we recommend that you use. However, and that is a conjunction like but, and, or, it's basically saying, hey, even though that these are the tools, they may not be applicable to everything that you're doing. So you take the pieces that make sense and apply it to the actual project and lead the project. We know that how successful a project can be is always based off the people that are involved in the project. It starts with the people. So let's unpack today's 8-point framework. So first point, focus on outcome, not just processes. I was just talking about that, family, where sometimes we get so caught up in the process. You know, I shared with you the story about the vendor, and I also talked about how when you get caught up in processes, you lose sight. This is getting good to me now. You lose your vision on what can be because you're so caught up in your sight. What does that mean, ED? Vision is saying, I am projecting where I think we can go, but I'm going to use the sight to say, I know we can go there, but it's going to take the work, the required work. And so with focusing on outcomes, not just processes, is meaning prioritize achieving the desired project outcome rather than strictly adhering to just traditional processes and or methods. Let me hear my caveat before I get some people in the comments or somebody sending me a message like, what does that mean? Like you train and teach project management. Why are you saying not to follow processes? Again, guys, I'm not saying follow processes. I believe processes are great. I believe they're amazing. However, sometimes we as project managers, project coordinators, and program managers, we have a tendency to put everything in a box because we may have came from another organization and we may have been trained that way, or even through just studying for the PMP, or just in general, your years of experience. But then you get to an organization that they don't have that type of structure. Then what? How do you still produce a successful project, but still making sure you have the proper documentation, the proper people in place to help you lead this project? So what I'm saying, listen, while processes are definitely important, we have to ensure that consistency, quality should be followed, and not just blindly at the expense of delivering value and meeting a particular project goal. As you know, I like to make sure I give you some actionable steps. Here's an actionable step. Clearly define the project's desired outcomes, success criteria, and use them as your principles for all of your decisions. You see, I said decisions, not choices, for and actions. Let's move on to point number two. Challenge assumptions and sacred cows. I love this. You know, one of the reasons why I love this is that when you encourage the team to question and challenge and the long-held assumptions and beliefs and practice that may not be no longer valid, I've seen how this can bring the teams together. I've seen how it makes people now start looking at things like, now they're paying more attention because they're like, wait a minute, why are we doing this particular process? Not just, oh, well, this is how it's always been done. This is what the person that, you know, transferred the job opportunity over to me, how they've done it. So, but that doesn't mean that that's the correct way. So just because something has always been done a certain way doesn't mean it's the best and or the only way. That is key, family. That is not the only way. So challenging assumptions can lead to breakthroughs and innovation. Here's an actionable step for you. Conduct regular assumptions, really basically breaking down, really doing like a breakdown type exercise with the team where everyone is encouraged to identify and challenge the underlying assumptions behind the project's goals, plans, as well as practice. Let's move on to point number three. This is my favorite. Embrace transparency and open communication. I have to be honest and always say this when I talk about communication and transparency. Every time that I worked on a project where we had open transparency, open communication, that project and the team alone worked so well together because of the fact that they knew it wasn't anything personal. It wasn't someone coming in faking like, oh, well, it's not personal and they really attacking you. No, they were literally attacking the work. And really how that works is basically the ability to foster a culture where transparency and communication with project teams and stakeholders, information and ideals are shared freely, that's the key word, and respected freely, rather than relying on traditional or hierarchy communication. Family, we have to change the approach because, again, you want to have the ability to be flexible, because if you don't have that ability to be flexible when you're leading projects, there's chances, there's opportunities that you may miss that you may be able to have a chance to pivot. People think when you lead a waterfall type, leverage a waterfall type methodology, or what they call predictive, meaning it's more like A, B, C versus more of a scrum type approach. And they think, oh, well, we're not making any changes. What? That doesn't make sense. If something comes up, you identify something, of course you sit down with the team, we talk it through with the change, we document the change, even if we don't go forward with it, but that's a whole nother conversation. Here's an actionable step for you. Establish clear communication protocols and channels such as regular status updates, town hall meetings. And when I'm talking about town hall meetings for project managers, having the ability to bring in other people that may be connected in some way, but they're not really part of the project, to let them know what you're doing. This also buys you additional support. And encouraging just basically all around having a transparent type communication. If there's something that's bothering you, let's talk through it instead of you burying it down and then something little happening, you explode and I'm looking around like, what is this about? Let's move on to point number four. Embrace a collaborative and inclusive type leadership style. Listen, by adapting a leadership style that prioritizes collaboration, that's like my key word, collaboration, inclusion and empowerment, rather than the traditional top-down or authoritative approach. That's why I always enjoy leaders that I've worked with, that they left their title at the door. Okay, you don't like that. Well, they left their title before they jumped on the call. We understood their position. We understood their role and their impact, but they were there to serve as well as provide information of thoughts. But you know, I heard this story one day, and I'll give it really a high level, where the CEO walks into this room with all his direct reports, throws a problem out there, said that what they were dealing with. And the next thing, he gives the solution to the problem. What does that do right away? Right away, the direct reports feel like, well, we have to make it seem like his solution or her solution is the best solution, instead of the CEO or whatever, you could pick the role, project manager coming in and saying, hey, we have an issue. What do you guys think? Here's my thoughts. No. You should be the last person to speak. Your subject matter experts should be stepping in. Other people within your team should be stepping in and giving solution. You should be the last one to give your proposed solution, because if you don't, if you do it the other way, where you come in leading with the solution, your team is going to tense up and be like, oh, well, we'll just go with that. So then we miss out on an opportunity to collaborate. We miss out on an opportunity to truly have a project planning or a decision-making type approach to whatever the problem is and finding a solution. I do believe in, if you're going to your leader or if you're going to anyone, come with a proposed solution. Don't, especially if you're working for someone, come with a proposed solution. Don't just come in there with nothing. However, even if you got that proposed solution, if you're leading the project or you're leading the effort, it's up to you to allow everyone else to speak. And because you want that diversity of how are these people thinking about solving this solution? Here's an actionable step for you. Provide opportunities and channels for the team and stakeholders to participate in the project planning, the decision making, and the problem solving, and actively, that's the key word, because some of these project managers are not actively, but actively seek and incorporate their input and feedback. If you knew how much respect that you would get just by taking someone's solution. Now, if it doesn't make sense and it's not going to work, I'm not telling you to do that. What I'm saying is, if it's a great idea, something that's going to help move the project along, is it going to help find a risk mitigation strategy, approach, technique to address a particular risk before it flips into an issue. Whatever the thing is, you want to be able to allow your team to be part of that conversation. Point number five, embrace a solution-focused approach. Listen, family, what you want to be able to do, and I recommend it and I give it two thumbs up, is encourage and enable project teams to focus on finding and delivering solutions to problems and challenges rather than doing the, you know, the generic way where you're just simply identifying, analyzing the problem the traditional way instead of finding different ways. And speaking of problems, one of the books I would recommend, and I'm sorry this is book heavy today, is this book here, Dig Civ, Reason for Problem Solving. I think it's an excellent book. I'm kind of biased because that is my mentor, my friend, and my buddy. But again, that book gives you a platform to help you, you know, do better, or I don't want to say do better, but encourage you to tackle and want to face more problems and work with a team that is looking to assist and solve those problems. Here's an actionable step. I gave you a training tool piece, which was the Dig Civ book, but provide training resources, solution-focused techniques and tools such as briefs, as well as design thinking. I said I was going to do something around design thinking, but creating a supportive and empowering environment. When you create a supportive and empowering environment, it allows for everyone else to feel comfortable being uncomfortable and helping solve that particular problem. Let's move on to point number six. Embrace a human-centric approach. When you're leading projects, family, one of the things is you know your number one customer is your people. You won't be able to do this without your people. Now, there are some projects that you may not need people on, for all my intelligent folks out there. But seriously, you want to be able to put the needs, preferences, and experiences of the project users, customers, and beneficiaries all at the center of the decision, as well as the activities, rather than relying on a system-centered approach. Here's an actionable step. Conduct regular user research, testing, validation throughout the entire project lifecycle. One of my recommendations that you use is interviewing, observation, usability testing. These are all key things to help you as you're navigating this project, as you're leading it. Let's move on to point number seven, embrace a cross-functional approach. Now, I know sometimes that could be like, well, that's common sense. You might need different departments. You would be shocked how many times I've seen people want to be project managers, and because they want to be project managers, they'll fire up a project in their department and they won't involve anyone, and they go do all this work and say, hey, this was going to be coming out, and the rest of the team cross-functional is like, wait a minute, I don't think that's going to work because this and this. And then they're frustrated because they're like, well, why you didn't say anything to me? Well, you didn't let me know about the project. So I say all that and I digress by saying you want to be able to encourage and facilitate collaboration and integration across different functions, departments, and disciplines, rather than, again, relying on that traditional, I'm going to take my ball and go home, or I'm going to work in a silo area and then I'll come out for air to let you know what I worked on. So one of the actionable steps there that I recommend is establishing a cross-functional project team or steering committee and creating opportunities and channels for regular communication, coordination, as well as collaboration across different functionalities and levels. Point number eight, embrace a resilient and what? Adaptable approach. What does that mean, ED? You always want to be adaptable in project management. You never know when you're leading a project what you may run into, what you may find, and you may have to make some changes. And making those changes, they are not the end of the world. It's just like we're going to have to go through the change management process and get the change fully approved. Because a lot of times, again, I always share with you that sometimes project managers don't want to go through the change management process because of the concern of affecting their triple constraints. What is that? Their scope, their cost, their schedule, as well as quality. So they're like, oh, if I make this change, the cost may go up. If I make this change, the schedule is going to be impacted. If I make this change, now we're going to have to do the scope over again. I don't even know how to. So it's all of these fears that come up instead of saying, hey, we need to make this change. And based on the information that we have, it makes sense to make this change. So one of the things I would recommend is put people through like scenario type training, meaning like creating an environment where I call them mock projects, where you say, okay, we're going to do like a mock project. This is the body of the information that we're going to be working on, meaning we have our charter and we're going to go from here and we're going to, you know, build out a project management plan. We're going to build out a schedule, etc. And I'm saying all that to say, to see where, because you'll be able to find out where people get tense at. And a lot of times it's always at the beginning and at the middle. Because once you start ramping down a little bit, everybody's happy, like, yeah, I knew we could do it. And you sitting there like, yeah, I did too. But anyway, I digress. Here's my bonus for you today, family. Embrace participating approach. What does that mean? Actively seek out diverse perspective, experiences, and contributions to project teams and stakeholders. One of the things I really enjoy in being a project manager is the ability to work with so many diverse people. I believe that being able to do that really has opened up my eyes to see the importance of having diverse thoughts and not just, you know, a get along just to get along because we want to make this person happy. No, having diverse thoughts and having a diverse approach to how we lead projects makes us more flexible and allows us to be better project managers, allows us to be better leaders as well. Here's my three closing remarks. Point number one, focus on the outcome, not just the process. Don't get caught up in the traditional process methods. And again, my caveat, I'm not telling you processes are not important because they truly are. But I also want you to understand the ability to be able to be flexible, the ability to follow when you do need to make a change. Yeah, you follow that process of the change management process, but having the ability to make the change because you know it has to be done. And you move forward because you are the decision maker. If you're taking a PMP, most of the questions are always asking, what should the project manager do? Because it's all about what are you going to do as a project manager? Let's move on to my next closing remark. Embrace a solution-focused approach. Again, a lot of leaders get caught up in the actual problem versus the solution. So you want to make sure that you are more solution focused instead of problem focused. Ooh, I like that. Reason why I like that, family, is because when you say, okay, this is the problem, we understand this is the problem, and you shift gears and say, okay, let's start listing out what we think could solve this problem instead of saying, well, you know, yesterday this happened, 2 days ago I got to do this, 3 days I got, and you're like, okay, that's great, but that doesn't solve the problem. Let's move on to point number three, embrace a collaborative and inclusive leadership style. I always say, Your leadership styles as a project manager will change. You want to have different leadership styles because if you have a team that they're about business, they're about, you get on a call, it's no gibber, it's like, okay, hey, this is these are the three outcomes we're looking to achieve. 1, 2, 3. Okay, we got them, let's go. And they're off to working versus you may have a team that you may have to be so much, you know, be part of so much as far as, I don't want to use the word micromanagement because I dislike that. But I'm saying you may have to be more hands-on with your approach with regards to checking in regularly more than you normally would because, again, of the team may be new. There may be, you know, they're just learning information. So there's a lot of different variables. But the point I'm trying to make is having an ability to just not rely on just the top-down authority, but to empower the team. Like, hey, this is what we're going to do. Okay, let's go to leadership and let them know this is what we're doing. Here, let's make sure we iron out all of the points. We look at everything that we possibly can think of or the questions that they may ask. Boom, package that all up. Let's go present to them. This is what we plan on doing. And we're already answering the questions in our PowerPoint. We're already answering the questions when we're talking through things. So by the end of that presentation, you don't see any hands go up because it's like, oh, well, you think as I was thinking, you're already ahead. Hey, family, I really truly hope you enjoyed today's episode. I enjoyed delivering it. I go by the name of ED. Until next time, I'm out.